is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Well, welcome everyone to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors, of course, is very proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, your host. Along with me, of course, is my co-host, Andy Beham, looking very tan.
I don't know about tan. They don't usually call red tan, but I definitely did not reapply the sunblock quite enough yesterday.
Hey, but you must have been out there working hard.
No, for once, I get to tell you I did something fun, and I wasn't just doing yard work. So we got our boat out for the first time this year, you know, mid-July.
Well, yeah, that's usually the way it works.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day. Went down to Lake Pepin, spent the day with the girls out tubing and hanging out. And
so were you riding in the tube?
I was pulling the tube. Yeah. Every now and again, they'd get kind of bored when I'd stop because I was hot and I wanted to swim. Come on, Dad, hurry up. But
oh, you party pooper.
Yeah, I know. But no, we had a fun time. How about you? What did you do this weekend?
Well, we went up to my brother's cabin up by Little Yellow Lake and Big Yellow Lake, just up by Siren, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
My brother puts this, I don't know, this what you want to call a kind of a family get-together every 4th of July, and we had a ball. We had probably about 23 people up there.
Oh, so decent-sized cabin up there.
Well, actually, he's got his main, we'll call it the lodge, his big cabin, and then he's got a bunkhouse that he built that also sleeps 8 people.
All right.
So we can handle a lot of people up there. But yeah, we did the whole tubing, boating, got out and did a little fishing.
Yep.
The bass were hitting pretty good. I tried to do a little pan fishing because I wanted to bring a little bit back, for a little fish fry and stuff.
Yeah.
Walleyes were a little slow.
Any luck? No?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep, we had that. But
I heard you guys ate well.
Oh, ate way too much.
Yeah.
You know, we do everything from the omelets in the bag to shrimp boils to the pizzas over the fire and stuff.
Oh, you got to love the shrimp oil.
Oh, yeah. That's the best.
And you know, shrimp, they're kind of like little water insects.
Yes. You're leading us
you
into
like
our,
that? Yeah. It's called a transition.
Good. That's why you're the radio professional
there
you are. Well, Andy, we are extremely lucky today. I was sitting around.
We'll find out.
Yes. And I get this little magazine from the state of Minnesota called the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer. And there was an article in there about Crunch Goes to Crickets. It's Meet the Minnesotans Who Are Eating Insects.
Oh, not crunch like if you accidentally step on one.
No.
It's
actually. And it was by Frank Burrows.
Nope. Frank Burris.
Burris. folks, I practiced that last name several times, and of course I got it. So I took a chance and sent him an email, and, hey, would you be interested in coming on the show? And he said, sure, and by the way, how's Andy Beham doing? I said, small world.
Yeah, Frank and I go way back. Good to see you again, Frank.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
I think in our college days, Frank and I worked at the same summer camp, and, you know, 15 years ago, we'll go with.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, but we're hitting the big time here, Andy. Frank, I just want to talk a little about your background a little bit.
Sure.
He's the author of The Geography of Madness. Now, have you explained what that is a little bit? But he's also contributing editors to Poets and Writers Magazine, a columnist at the Rotarian Magazine. His work has appeared in Harper's, Outside, Men's Health, Bicycling, Esquire, Audubon, Scientific American Mind, Wired, The Washington Post Magazine, and on and on and on and on it goes. So, Andy, we've hit the big time. We're scoring here and stuff. But
we're on the map, Dave.
Yes. But welcome, Frank. We're really glad
thank you.
To have you here. So, why don't you give us a little bit about your background? That's just my wonderful introduction that we had into you.
Yeah. So I grew up in Winona, Minnesota. Southeast of here, and like Andy's saying, we worked at the same camp together when I was in college up in Longville, Minnesota, at Camp Olson, which is kind of an old school YMCA camp where our Are your kids going there?
Yeah, they've already gone this summer, but kind of generations have changed.
Right, exactly. I went to school at St. Olaf here in Northfield, so lived in town for a bit. And then after college, went and kind of lived in different places. In Tanzania, I taught English for a year, and then my wife and I moved out to Portland, Oregon for a little while, and then we moved to Thailand, which is where we first kind of got experience eating insects, because there it's like a normal thing. Moved back to the Midwest and lived in Madison, and then came up to the Twin Cities and have been up here for about 10 years now, so back in the area.
You know, when I was reading this article, Crunch Goes Crickets, first I want to compliment you on how well it was written.
Oh, thank you.
Is it difficult to get published in magazines like this? Or how did you connect up with the Minnesota Volunteer?
It really depends. I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. I've been freelancing for 20-plus years, and so I know there's a process with it where you develop a pitch and send it to the editor, and if they like the idea, they give you an assignment and that sort of thing. And so it all depends on if the assignment is right for the publication, if the editor likes your work, thinks you can do it, that sort of thing. And so I had known one of the editors here who used to work at the Utney Reader, and I did some work for him there, and then he moved over to the Conservation Volunteer a few years ago, and I had this story that I just wanted to do. I was kind of fascinated by this scene, and it was kind of around 2012 or 13, people started to become more aware of this stuff, and a few books were published, including Daniela Martin's book Edible, which is kind of the primer for everybody on edible insects. And I don't know, it was just always in the back of my mind that I wanted to do something like that. And then a film came to the film festival in Minneapolis called The Gateway Bug, about eating insects and this kind of movement that was coming up. And so I went to that, and then I decided I wanted to do a story about it, you know, for the Conservation Volunteer. And so I pitched them, and they were interested and stuff, and it's unusual, like a lot of people don't do it, and you know, it's kind of new and it's kind of interesting, and it's a way of like accessing natural resources in a way that people don't think about. So
well, I think like it said in the article, you know, it was a novelty forever, where you'd see a scorpion in a sucker, or you know, a little box of ranch flavored crickets, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then as, and tell me if you agree or not, like kind of as the foodie movement came to, and shows like Andrew Zimmerman with, you know, from Minnesota kind of traveling around, is it opening people's eyes to it a little more? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's been just kind of a general awareness. People are more interested in where their food comes from and in kind of locavore stuff. And that was sort of a big push a few years ago as well, and so I don't know if that was part of it or not, but you know, I mean, it's not still not like a huge movement, but it's definitely even a few years ago there was not much stuff you could actually buy, and now if you go on Amazon, I was just looking this morning, and there's you can buy their chapulines, the grasshoppers fried in salt and peppers from Mexico. You can buy a ton of those. They serve them at Safeco Field in Seattle as a concession. You can order like roasted crickets. You can get cricket flour. You can get cricket protein bars. Crickets are the kind of farmable thing. You can't farm grasshoppers because they don't understand the breeding cycle yet. You can get a salted canned zebra tarantula. You can get earthworm jerky, which
So you really can get anything on Amazon.
Yeah. I haven't tried the earthworm jerky. So
they actually make flour out of it, so like a high protein flour.
Yeah, it's pretty dense stuff, but you know, it's supposed to be good for
you. So you can make a cracker or bread out of it, or
Or cookies. Or people make like mealworm cookies. Okay. Mealworms are the other one that's really common and easy to use, although you know,
I've used them before as bait.
As bait, exactly.
Well, yeah, and when you get mealworms for eating yourself, you want to make sure you get them from a source that's like for people, because otherwise they'll feed them all kinds of stuff, because there's a big pet food industry for mealworms.
Oh,
and so
okay.
So you want to kind of be aware of that.
You know, I always think of people who hunt and fish as really kind of going green, you know, eating venison, eating pheasant, eating duck, eating fish you've caught.
Naturally raised as it can be.
And but this is a different type of, shall we say, hunting, going green, because you can actually, you go out and you hunt for your grasshoppers out in a field, for example.
Yeah, in fact, I just did that this morning. I mean, it's halfway between hunting and foraging in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is another way to kind of go green.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more than foraging because they can hop away from you.
Yes. I'm not always the quickest, stuff like that. You said when you were over in, was it Thailand?
Yeah.
That you experienced a lot of people eating insects. Is that common over there?
It's pretty common. You know, it's just not considered an unusual thing. They have, you know, there was this kind of special dish that you could order at a Laotian restaurant near where we lived. There was ant egg salad, but you can only get it in certain seasons and stuff. And there's, you know, if you go to any market, they'll have the fried kind of giant water bugs and stuff. And up in the north, they collect cricket or grasshoppers, and they have these special suits that you wear, and you like run through the field. They have nets that go between your arms and legs, so you can catch like as many as possible.
Nice.
So yeah, it's pretty common there. It's not really, and you know, other places too, like in Uganda, they have big locust kind of or grasshopper blooms, and there'll be like traffic jams because everybody stops and tries to catch as many as possible.
When I saw that in Thailand, there's entire industries that are dedicated to the ant eggs.
Yeah.
So it's big over there.
Is it more of a Western culture that has kind of been slow to accept the idea of eating insects? I mean, is it more accepted in other parts of the world?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I don't know how you map out exactly where it's accepted and where it's not accepted. I mean, obviously in sort of tropical areas, you're going to have more constant access to insects. Here in the north, we don't like have as much because they don't grow year round and they don't, you know, they're not always available and stuff. So it'd be extremely
or is it more
seasonal.
Of a need for necessity that
an economic need?
Yeah.
I don't know, I mean, possibly. I mean, it is like free food. I mean, there are passages even like in the Bible sanctioning eating locusts and stuff and certain things like that. So it's not a new thing. It's always happened and it's always been part of our history. And it just at some point, some people stopped because I guess they had other food sources or preferences changed or people got unused to it.
In doing my research for the show, I saw over 2 billion people worldwide eat insects on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lot more common than we may think sitting in our little happy homes and trying to keep the bugs out.
And when you look at, like, seafood, like shrimp and lobsters, they used to call lobsters bugs.
Yeah.
You know, they're not that much different than insects in a lot of ways. Well,
their shells are pretty much the same as a grasshopper.
Their shells are the same. They turn when you cook grasshoppers, you'll see they turn kind of red because they have the same antioxidant that shrimp and lobsters have when you cook them. And so they're kind of related in some ways to those, and they're not, you know, it's just a mindset. I mean, people used to think lobsters were gross and, you know, and just crawling around at the bottom. Now it's a delicacy. It's just a mindset change.
Before we came on the air, I was talking to Terry Knight, the owner of the station, and I was asking her, Frank's going to be bringing in, we think, some grasshoppers or crickets or something like that. Did she suggest red wine or white wine? But she wasn't sure, so I'm going to ask you that question. Which is the preferred wine?
Probably white.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
That's what I was thinking.
I did go to dinner a bit. The Gist fermentation bar where they had pairings of wines and drinks and beers with different kinds of insects. So,
yeah.
Huh. And your suggestion of, is there a particular white wine you would suggest?
It really depends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, folks, we have actually a hot plate in here, and we got a fry pan on it, and he's got the heat turned on.
We're going to be listening to Dave eat insects.
in a little bit. a bit here.
Actually, I'm excited to try. Yes. You got some chili peppers. And
yes.
Frank, what is your reaction that you get from people when you tell them, hey, I'm going to cook up some insects here? Does age make a difference? Is it easier to give them to a kid under 12? Do they kind of jump in? Or
Yeah, I mean, we in the article I wrote about.
Yeah, it sounded like in the article that kids were.
Especially little kids. Most of the little kids like don't even blink. It's not even doesn't seem like a weird thing at all. And they're just super excited about it, especially the boys. You know, they.
I'm trying to think when I was a little kid, all the things I put in my mouth: dirt, worms. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is. I mean, I do think it's a natural thing to you know, it's not inherently disgusting, it's something you sort of learn. So
now you've got two daughters, correct?
Yeah.
And what are their thoughts? And
I asked them if they had any thoughts. They said they're delicious and you should try them.
All right. My daughters pointed at me and laughed and said, I know what you have to do today.
Well, we all eat insects, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, that's true.
The USDA allows like 2 pounds of insects in your food every year. So.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I do have to tell you, Frank, so Memorial Day weekend, the summer camp that we both grew up working at, they host a work weekend where you go up and volunteer, and this year I got to build an outhouse. It was pretty fun. But in seeing, there's a lot of people up there that we used to work with and know us both. And I asked them all, I said, you'll never guess who's coming on my radio show to talk about eating bugs. 50% of them guessed you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. You have a reputation. No.
Wait, where was this?
This was up at Camp Olson.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So it was like Britt and Leon, different people that they're like, oh, yeah, that makes complete sense. But in your defense, you did used to lead, you know, wild edible hikes and things like that,
right,
too. So
yeah, we had the Nature Center. I started the Nature Center, and then we did Fun with Frank. Yep. Nature walks. And
so you would take people out in the woods and show them different plants that are edible here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, a few. You know, I did a training up at Wolf Ridge, and they kind of, you know, naturalist training, and they take you out and show you a few different things that you can eat and stuff. And I was always interested in those sorts of things. I had like an edible wild edibles book, you know, and was always kind of, that was always an interest of mine.
Well, you sound like the perfect person to go on one of those survivor shows that they always have.
Yeah.
put you out there all alone, or what's the other one? Naked and Afraid. You know, they'll put you out there and you got to try and survive. Sounds like my money would be on you, Frank.
There's a camp down in Winona called Seekers Wild where they take kids out into the woods and teach them survival skills.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, like hunting frogs and fishing and how to make a fire and how to boil water with, you take a log and burn a hole in it and then you put hot rocks in it to boil your water and stuff.
Huh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, all kidding aside, you know, some of that is, I think it would be great for kids to get them back closer to nature.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That not everything just comes pre-wrapped in the store or from a fast food place and stuff.
Get
them to experience that a little bit more.
Starting a fire without a lighter and crumpled up newspaper and lighter fluid. And
Yeah, they do that too with the bowstring.
Yep. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Frank, are there some benefits to eating insects? I mean, health benefits versus, you know, like a good hunk of bacon?
Probably. You know, I don't think it's been studied super a lot. But one of the things that Daniela Martin writes about in her book is how, you know, in our evolutionary history, one of the things that you need to develop a brain is a long chain fatty acids. And those, you know, you can get those in seafood and a couple other places that are kind of hard to get. But one place you can get a lot of them is in insects, especially like termites. And so some people think that's evidence that, you know, that's played a big role in our evolution and the way we developed. So, you know, in that sense, you know, it would be pretty healthy, a healthy kind of meat, you know, with a lot of those kind of proteins and stuff. And it depends also, I mean, insects are so responsive and they grow fast that it would depend where they're feeding and stuff too. So if they're feeding in some place with pesticides and stuff, that might not be so great because they can accumulate them.
Is that a concern people should have?
Yeah, you should think about that, definitely, especially with something like cicadas that are in the ground for 17 years. If they're in a place where pesticides are being applied every year, you know, those could build up in them. And so it's better to go out into a place. As far as I know, the field behind our house, which is in the city park, they don't really apply any sort of pesticides. They just mow it, you know, but any random field should be fine, you know.
When I did see cicadas compared to a bacon, they sit for so long, they build up that fattiness to them, so
Mm-hmm,
you can replace your bacon.
Yeah, boy, that's pretty.
I do like bacon.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Now we do get a lot of people that will listen to the show, and we get them fired up. But before they run outside and start collecting insects, not all insects should be collected to be eaten. Is that a correct way? And how would we know?
Well, there's ones that are the safe ones. Basically, all the grasshoppers and crickets should be pretty safe. In a general rule, is that brightly colored insects are signaling some sort of toxin, and camouflage insects are usually not. I mean, you wouldn't want to use that 100%, but that's kind of a general.
So, an example would be like a monarch butterfly. Birds don't eat it because they taste so terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
They would taste terrible to us.
Right. Yeah, okay. They're bitter. Some of the beetles with the bright shells and stuff would be not good to eat. Whereas something that's trying to hide or evolve to hide would be probably good to eat. So, I mean, but you can look up the bugs that are good to eat and to catch. You know, it's dragonflies, cicadas, grasshoppers, crickets. The giant water bug, which we have here, is also supposed to be a real delicacy in Asia, you know, which I haven't heard of anybody. I've been bitten by one.
But yeah, they have a little stinger on them.
I know. That really hurts, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, and I do know you did bring us a dragonfly.
I did.
But there are some species that are protected, so.
Yeah.
I know that you can go on to the DNR website and kind of see what is.
Right.
What are the rules and regulations in Minnesota about? Are there any?
There aren't any. I called and asked, and this is obviously DNR publication, and they said that it hasn't really risen to the level that they need to put regulations in place, so it's not really a concern. As long as it's like mushrooms or berries or something. If you're harvesting for your personal use, it's not a big deal.
So they'd be able to go into you can go into a state park and harvest mushrooms. So yeah. I assume you'd be able to harvest insects.
Yeah, as long as it's for your own personal consumption, you're not like selling it at the market or something.
Now, the other day I had a lot of dead June bugs in front. Are June bugs edible?
I don't know. I don't know. You could look that up. Okay. I think they would be pretty crunchy.
I don't know. Well, they're pretty crunchy when I was walking across
them and
stuff.
Yeah.
But what about picking up dead insects to eat? Is it preferable just to let those and should concentrate more on live insects?
Or? Yeah, I would concentrate more on live insects. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, Dave, I say we go ahead, take a commercial break. While we're at break, maybe we can we'll fire up the hot plate.
Yeah, we'll fry up some butter.
We'll come back and eat some insects on the air.
Sure.
All right, sounds good.
So let's go ahead and take a short break and hear from our sponsor.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in a home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back to Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. And we're talking with Frank Burris, who recently just had an article published in the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer Goals, Crunch Goes to Crickets. And as we're sitting here, the hot plate is going. The butter is frying up here.
If you hear a sizzle, it's not a bad signal. That's just the crickets and grasshoppers.
And the
dragonfly.
And the dragonfly is on there. We might need a little more salt for us. I don't know.
No, there's some pepper. There's some chili peppers going in there. We're good.
Yeah, we should
get this microphone over here.
We've been doing well on a cooking show, I think.
Yeah, I think we need a second show, Dave.
So do you see how they're turning red?
It's like little mini shrimps.
Yes.
It is, basically.
You know what? You said something in the article about they turn red, and they are turning red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you see the chapulines, the Mexican crickets are always red, and that's just what they turn when you cook them.
So before we start eating some of this, Frank, tell us a little bit about some of the different tastes that we would experience with some of the different insects. Do they all taste the same? Are there different flavors?
Well, they do. It's hard to say because, you know, when you put like salt and garlic and chili peppers in, that's basically a lot of what you're tasting. I mean, they do have kind of a, especially the bigger ones, have kind of a meaty, earthy taste, which is, it's not, it's really nice, actually. These little ones, I just have these little ones from this year because it's early in the season and they haven't really had a chance to get very big yet. I have one dragonfly that I caught this morning.
Let me do a comparison. When I have venison, I typically can tell the difference between a deer that was harvested in northern Minnesota living off in the pine woods versus a deer living off of corn down here. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between a grasshopper captured here in an alfalfa field and a desert grasshopper? Any difference in
supposedly
taste?
Yes. I don't have that much experience with eating around the country, but when I talked to Pat Crowley, the guy who started Chipul Bars, which is a cricket protein bar company, he said that crickets, he lives in Utah, and he said he was in Minnesota because he has family here, and he said they taste, because they're eating grass, they tasted kind of like alfalfa or kind of grassier than the ones out there. And so certainly, I mean, they're so insubstantial, you know, there's got to be pretty influenced by what they're eating as far as what they're
so
tasting.
He actually has a restaurant or a bar that you can go to?
No, sorry, not that kind of bar. It's it's like a company that makes
bar?
The protein bars can buy.
Oh, a protein bar. Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking of a place to take my wife for
it's your new pre-workout regimen, Dave.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'll stay with the bacon.
I don't know how to respond to that when I'm talking about pre-workout and you're just going bacon.
Hey, Terry's the one that's big into protein bars. It sounds more like up her alley here.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get her to try one.
They're really good, actually.
And she's not buying it.
And he told me his son actually likes them, which is good because he's a picky eater.
Yeah.
So anybody will eat the cricket bars.
You know, I got to tell you, this smells actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready to dive in.
Have you done this on pizza?
All right. No, I haven't, actually.
Okay, I think that's...
All right, let me see.
Well, Dave, you live in a rural area. You can go harvest, and we'll have a pizza night.
Grasshopper and pineapple. That sounds like...
All right, well, the moment of truth is approaching as they are coming off the pan.
All right, let me just see if these are done.
I appreciate you doing that for us.
They look red, except for the...
Oh, yeah.
What's the black? Well, that's the... Dragonfly.
So just grab it by a leg and go to town. Here we go, Dave. Cheers.
So how do you tell when they're done?
They get red and they are kind of crunchy a little bit.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
No.
Yeah, Gary, you should have one.
Or not.
No, that's actually pretty good.
The legs aren't wiggling. I'm good to go.
No. I will have a few more.
And the dragonfly.
I do think that would be good on pizza.
So would pepperoni.
Would. Frank, are you going to be coming out with a cookbook in the near future?
I was not planning on it, but...
I think...
It's not a bad idea. Is that off then?
Come on, Terry, dig in.
Mm-mm. All right, I'm going to look for a meaty one here. Yeah. Oh, that's a good looking one.
Try the grasshopper.
That's what I'm going for.
Or the dragonfly.
I can handle that.
Okay.
A little spice to it. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can buy those by the...
I mean, I'm not going to stop eating skates.
Here, so...
Dave's trying to show off that he's eating two and they fall out of his mouth.
That one said, nope, I'm coming back.
There,
out.
I got it.
Okay, so you ate it off the floor.
Oh, well.
You sure you don't want to try one?
I actually like them a little on the crunchier side.
Yeah,
that's a dragonfly. Mm-hmm. Terry, do you want it or should I go for it? Oh. You want half of this?
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, like in the movie with the two dogs with the spaghetti thing?
Here you go.
We're not going to share that.
Lady and the Tramp.
Okay. Yeah, Lady and Tramp.
Mm-hmm. Mm, salty.
Yeah, but the dragonfly is like fattier than the... I
like the crickets and grasshoppers a little better. But
I found the dragonflies, they tend to go all to my hips. So I try to stick with the grass.
An extra hour at the Y tomorrow?
Realize the man has no hips.
All right, well, I haven't stopped eating them, so there's a sign for you.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they're good.
Oh, wait. Before you put it in, got to get them.
Okay.
Come on.
All right, it's official. Terry's going for it.
Yes, she is.
Okay, that's the little one.
Just a little one.
Just a little one. Okay.
You will be surprised how good it is.
Yeah,
so not good, bad.
See?
Not bad.
We've converted her.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go. That's
we are really going green here.
Yes.
As long as we got garlic and butter. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, thanks for opening our eyes to that one.
Yeah, of course.
There goes the last of it. We'll take care of it.
All right.
So do you have to just catch the bugs fresh and cook them up, or...
Well,
can you store them?
No,
for a
you
while?
Can store them in the freezer. It's okay. Not a big deal. You can either, like these ones I just caught this morning and then put in the freezer about 4 hours. It should be enough to for them to cease living. And then, you know, you can also, if you want, you can drown them. Or there's a better, I mean, you could, I mean, throughout history, people didn't have freezers. So I'm sure it's like not, like it's a luxury to have to not deal with the live ones, you know, but, so it's, I don't think it's necessary to kill them beforehand, but that's mostly what people do. You put them in the freezer.
Cause and it's just like die. It's just winter, like winter freeze.
Yeah, exactly. It's not cruel or anything necessarily.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can go out in the fall then and harvest a bunch of nice grasshoppers and just freeze them. Yep. Will they last in the freezer? Or should you be eating them?
I think so. I mean, probably like everything, they're better fresh. I mean, yep. I don't know that they'll keep as well as like meat or something.
Yeah.
Necessarily, you know, they'd probably be better to the closer to the harvesting of them. But, you know, the ones when Kia Brosh took me out, she had some that she had collected the year before and had in the freezer, and they were good. They were big ones. So there's a substantial amount of meat there to freeze. You know, but you'll want to like put them in the freezer. And then when they're dead, you kind of take them out, take the wings off, take the back part of the legs off, the kind of stickly part, and then just put them in a Ziploc and stick them in the freezer, and it should be good.
All right. Well, yeah, I saw to catch the crickets, you can throw some oats in a box with a little hole and then just throw the box in the freezer in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried that down in our field, and I did not catch any crickets.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I read that, too, and I was... When I did this dinner at our house, I was going to try to have some crickets, too, but I couldn't find any, so...
Yeah.
So there's probably some trick to that, but I wasted a bunch of oats.
What about the insect larva? Do you harvest many of those, like caterpillars, or you stay away from those?
Caterpillars are tricky. I mean, a lot of people do eat grubs around the world, you know, and they're a really good source of protein and those fatty acids and stuff like that, I think. But I haven't heard about that many people doing it here, and I don't really know the distinctions.
And butterflies and moths, you kind of stay away from those?
Yeah, I would stay away from those because there are a lot of those. Some will be toxic, some won't, you know, and so it's hard to say. Yeah, generally people don't eat those.
So you mentioned this before, kind of the rule of thumb, if it's bright colored, probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
The dark color where they're kind of hiding.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a general rule. I would look up anything before I actually ate it, but yeah.
And what about spiders?
Spiders in general, I don't know, but tarantulas are one of the most edible things that people eat around the world. Yeah, because they're big, they have a lot of meat on them, they're supposedly good. You know, that's what Daniela Martin, who wrote the edible book, when she that was one of the first things she saw somebody eat. A guy she was working with down in Mexico, this tarantula came across and he like speared it and roasted it and ate it. And they have some like spiky hairs on the back that they'll shoot out at prey, so that's one area you kind of want to watch out for. But the legs are supposed to be good, and then some of the body.
You have to like pluck
too.
Off their fangs, or
I don't know. I haven't got that far. Yeah. Yes, but you can order it on Amazon and see what they did.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing,
Dave? You want to have dinner this weekend?
Yeah. I'm still thinking this. We could have a whole pizza place with different topics, your crickets, your grasshoppers.
We'll have to run out to the Red Barn Farm and pitch them the idea. They have fields all around there. They could just throw it in the wood fire oven. And
Frank, people like Andy and I who are now insect eaters, what should we be referred to as? Is there a name for what we are?
Yes, there is, and it's hard to pronounce. It's entomophis, I think, is how you pronounce it. Entomophy means just like the eating of. Ento is insect, and ophagy is consumption, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what they That's kind of the awkward term that
I tried looking up on YouTube pronunciation. I got three different versions.
Entomophy? Sounds right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, exactly. It's not a word. It doesn't just roll off your tongue.
So, as you said in your article, we'll just call it insect cuisine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's what Kia Brash likes to call
yeah.
it. Why not?
You can add all kinds of flavor to it. It's, you know, it's like chicken. It just takes on whatever flavor you cook it with.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going, Frank, in the U.S.? Do you see it continuing to become a little bit more popular, especially with Amazon and stuff offering?
I mean, it's really hard. Right now, it's kind of going from the novelty to the niche phase. And so there's a lot of companies coming online selling these things. Whether it will ever become, like, mainstream is hard to say. It's kind of a heavy lift because, you know, it requires a big cultural mindset.
You're not going to see them offered at Starbucks.
Well, you never know.
I mean, if they're selling them at a baseball field.
That's true.
I mean, who knows?
If you can get them in bar form.
Far be it for me to predict the...
Grab and go.
Yeah.
Ants are very common throughout the world, and there's many different species of ants. Are there people that eat ants?
Funny you should mention that.
That's also kind of transition.
Yes.
They are.
So common. What's in the jar, Frank?
What do you have in the
jar?
Well,
these are a few carpenter ants that I collected this morning. I had to put this cellophane on top of the thing because they were crawling out. And one of the Pat Crowley, who I talked to, said you can eat ants live, and they have a kind of a citrusy taste because of the, I thought he said folic acid, but it's actually formic acid that's in there somewhere in the ants. And so he said, I have not tried this yet, so this is an experiment which we're gonna
we get to be guinea pigs.
So
you can start with Andy.
No, what he said was that you take the head off, otherwise they bite you on the way down. That one's getting away.
I don't need it nibbling out of my throat on the way down.
It's a little bit gruesome, but
does it taste like a lemon drop?
It's hard to say.
We're just sitting here watching Frank eat an ant. So.
Yeah.
Now we'll watch Dave eat an ant.
So if a person likes their meat rare.
Yeah, it does have a little tang to it. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Well, let's find out.
Pleasant. Like a breath mint.
That's crawling around. I'm going to carry breath mints in my pocket. It's a pocket full of ants.
I got a piece of rotted wood.
All right. There you go, Andy. Can you get him?
I better put my glasses on, so.
Trying to figure out which end's the head here. Okay.
You just pull the head off. Andy is inserting it in his mouth.
They're a little too small to get a strong flavor.
It tastes like when you're riding a motorcycle and you get a bug in your mouth. You said, I think they're too small. I didn't taste anything.
We had some big ones around the house, but they were all underground today. Do you want one, Dave?
Sure. I will give it a try. I need a breath mint.
All right. We'll let these other last two go.
I couldn't figure out which end was the head at first.
I mean, the only reason you take the head off is because they'll kind of grab your throat on the way down.
Just eat it whole, Dave. You're fine.
There, I got his head.
All right.
I think that's its head.
Yep, you're good.
Yeah, I think if we had bigger ones.
Yeah. Not much of a taste.
Yeah, we'll have to go out and find some bigger ones.
Yeah, when you see those giant carpenter ants, grab one and have a snack.
All right, well, looks like I got my work cut out for me after work today.
We'll wash that one down.
Does it really make the Diet Coke pop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not mixed marks on the ants, but the crickets are the grasshoppers are good, huh?
Oh yes.
Yeah. I like the crickets and the grasshoppers.
Yeah, I mean grasshoppers are probably one of the oldest foods for humans, you know.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what they were like when they get to be a couple inches long and have some more meat to them, but these are good.
Cook them up, throw a little manwich in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got yourself a date night.
I'd be curious to try the tacos, though, to cook them up with that seasoning. And I was saying before the show, maybe the first one I eat, it would be a hard shell taco, so I'm not sure exactly what I'm crunching on, but...
Yeah, no. They're good. They're good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as far as sustainability with it, you were saying, you know, crickets, they can farm. Grasshoppers, they haven't quite figured out how to do yet.
Mm-hmm.
Are there others that they farm... And it can be internationally, too, not just what's taken off around here.
Yeah. I think they do farm ant eggs. Do they? Does that what it seemed like with, from what you were reading?
Yeah, they were saying there was like an industry around it with, you know, farming it and supplying it.
Yeah, mealworms you can grow really easily, and so that's another one people are growing for food. Crickets are the biggest and the easiest, and there are cricket farms like around, and you can like start one in your house kind of if you want to. Or outside your house probably would be better.
Right now my wife is so nervous at home.
She should be, because I'm pulling up edible insects on Amazon as we speak, so I can send them, have them shipped right to your house, Jody.
Are there food and drug regulations around the selling of insects in the U.S.?
Probably. I'm not really sure. I mean, I would assume any sort of food consumption would be somewhat regulated like that.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Well, you can get a mixed bag of them, Dave, for $13.99 on Amazon.
Okay.
I hope I'm not shamelessly, you know, supporting Amazon and getting us in trouble here. But it has a mixed bag that will have grasshoppers, mole crickets, silkworms, crickets, and sago worms.
What's the last one?
Sago worm?
Sago worms that grow in a sago palm. They like burrow in there. They're kind of a grub, I think, or something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, those are a common one.
It's a mixed bag. You can just throw them in your recipes and season them up
for movie night.
Yeah.
Frank, in the article Crunchco's Crickets, I think it was in there, you mentioned about you're with a truck driver who was the gal in the article? She mentioned about a truck driver just reaching out, grabbing a leaf, and opening it up, and there was full of ant eggs.
Oh, yeah. That was Daniela Martin when she was down in Mexico, and those entomoles, the ant eggs, were one of the other things that she saw this guy she knew eat.
And he just opened up the leaf and full of ant eggs, and he just...
Yeah, just poured them right in his mouth. Yeah, they're like a delicacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
So ant eggs, are they better eaten raw versus cooked?
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the ones we ate in Thailand were raw. Yeah. I'm not an expert on that.
I wonder how you go about collecting ant eggs. That's got to be a little interesting.
Yeah, well, the easiest way would be to farm them.
Oh, farm them.
Yeah, I would think. But I'm not sure.
Wow.
I was looking for, there was one I saw of different recipes for ant eggs, and some of this I had.
The scorpions are another one that are commonly eaten.
Yep.
You know, you go to markets in a lot of places. Yeah, and as I think when you cook them, the poison goes away or like is detoxified somehow, and so you can eat them.
And you eat everything, the outer skin, the shell?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they probably take the stinger off, but it doesn't. They're not like poisonous. Yep. So.
And I saw in Japan, it's a delicacy to have rice cooked with wasps.
Yeah, I've heard of that too.
So you got all over the place. Every place has its own versions, but yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Unfortunately, we've run out of food and we are running out of time.
Hey, what's the future hold for you, Frank? What's some of your next projects or things you're going to be working on?
Wait, one of these ant escapes. I better eat it. For the future, I have a few stories I'm working on. Oh, that was a good one. Well, this summer, my wife and two daughters were going to go hike over the Grand Portage up on North Shore to Pigeon River. And let me see. I have a few columns I'm working on. I'm actually right now editing an anthology of stories and poems about Minneapolis, so that's taking up a bunch of time, so that's fun.
You've got quite a diverse from writing about eating insects to poems about Minneapolis. I mean, that's a talent.
It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll take it as that.
Yeah. You can, as a writer, you can specialize or you can generalize, and I've always generalized.
Because better to know a little bit about a lot of things than...
I guess. Yes.
Well, we were talking before we came on the air about Terry Knight actually interviewing you with her 15 with the author.
Oh, yeah.
A while back. Which book was that?
That was the book. Well, that's the only book I've had out. It's called Geography of Madness, and it's about penis thieves, voodoo death, and search for the meaning of the world's strangest syndromes. I don't know if you can say all that on the radio.
It's out there now. Okay. We're good.
It's about cultural syndromes and like mental illnesses that only occur in certain cultures. Like the sort of main one is, or the main one that got me interested in it was in West Africa and some parts of China. People believe that your genitals can be kind of magically stolen or else shrink into your body and then you'll die.
All right. So,
well, we're talking diverse here.
Yeah.
It is interesting, I suppose, going from different cultures to see those different types of beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess both those things come from traveling around. I was fortunate to travel a bunch when I was younger and stuff, and so you see all kinds of different things and are exposed to these things, and then you spend like the rest of your life trying to understand them.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, you've got me interested. I think Andy and I are going to do some grasshopper hunting. We're going to go trophy hunting, though, when they're a little bit bigger in the fall.
When our other hunting fails, we can always fall back on it.
Have something to survive on.
No, this was interesting. We had some interesting cuisine, but we're not quite done with the interesting because there's still time for Dave's interesting facts.
And we're going to be talking about insects, and you probably know a lot of this, Frank, so let's quiz Andy first.
He likes to stump me and make me look like I don't know anything.
Well, of course, insects are the most successful creatures on the planet. To date, how many different species of insects have been cataloged?
Just under 2 million.
Well, it is under that. There's about 1.5 million species
on the planet. I thought I saw something somewhere.
But two-thirds of them are insects.
Oh, really?
What's the biggest group of insects? In fact, what is the biggest group of creatures?
Flying insects. I don't know, flies or mosquitoes. I don't know. I'm wrong.
What do you see in June a lot on your porch?
Ladybugs?
Okay, it's beetles.
Okay. Ladybugs are a type of beetle, Dave.
That's true, but we're going to hire. About how many different species of beetles are there?
Oh, God. 20,000. I have no idea. Don't look at me like I'm stupid. You wouldn't have known if you didn't have the Google.
Oh, I knew that. Frank, you want to make a guess how many different species of beetles?
That are known.
That are known. To date.
It would just be guessing 200,000.
Well, you're a lot closer than Andy is. 380,000 species.
Wow.
Just beetles alone.
Mm-hmm.
Ants are on the order of 10 quadrillion ants live in the planet any given moment. That's about how many ants per humans?
Oh, geez.
That's a math question, not an insect question.
There's nothing interesting about math, Dave. I'm going to say it's about 10 million.
No, it's 1.4 million ants per human. So for every person on the planet, there's 1.4 million ants. That's a lot of ants.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, let's talk termites. A termite queen can produce how many eggs in a single day? On average.
10,000.
Three.
You're, well, kind of close, but not quite.
No.
Take a guess.
600.
6,000 to 7,000 eggs are typically, on average, laid by a single termite queen in a single day.
Wow. And that's why they can do destruction when they get in.
But there was, in Africa, or excuse me, in Southeast Asia, there was reported where they found a termite queen that was cranking out an egg at a rate of one every 2 seconds. That added up. It actually did 43,000 eggs in a day.
Oh, wow.
And didn't even take a break.
How's that possible? She must be eating on one side and turning me into eggs on the other.
It's just...
I wonder how big a termite queen is.
It's true. I read it on Google. No, but that holds a world record that was actually observed. So that's an interesting fact.
Well, Dave, that was interesting. Well, we'd like to thank Frank again for joining us and opening our eyes to the delicacies of insects.
So. That actually was. They were actually pretty tasty.
Yeah, they really were.
I was impressed.
We'd also like to thank Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoor Facebook page and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. We'd like to remind you to tune in next Saturday to On Tap with Corey and Ira. Learn about beer, and maybe they'll have a show on pairings that we could do, or we could do a joint show with them.
We bring the insects to cook up. They can bring the beer.
There we go. Sounds like a good Saturday to me. And we will be with you in two Saturdays once again, but we'd like to remind you, until next time,
get out there and enjoy the great outdoors, folks. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One, or streaming at kymnradio.net.